Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Gift of Gaming podcast. And boy, do I have news for you. Video game news, that is, I'm not pregnant. It's a November news episode. Take it away, intro. All right, what's up? It's me, your
Trump?
Host.
Should we just make this a politics episode? No.
Is that where we're going so soon? Yeah, it's me, your host, Darren Wade, and today I'm joined by the console-hating PC player, lore-seeking full-time Canadian himself, Chris Robbins, and the artist formerly known as Mr. Xbox Games Pass himself, Luke Maycock. Gentlemen, delight to have you on board as always. How are you?
Doing all right, man. A little tired. You know, it was office day, so a little wrecked from all the walking.
Yeah.
And, you know, social interaction with people in the office.
With other human beings. Yeah,
my social battery is just non-existent since COVID, man.
I did like, I think it was last week, I did a Thursday, Friday, Saturday thing. Had, like, to meet people. Sunday, I was just like, I just want to wrap up on my bed and just leave me alone. I was like, holy crap, that's all I have. That's all, like, three, and, like, gentle. It wasn't as if I was going wild. Just gentle social interactions with people. And I was like, nope. No, yeah, why doesn't
like
want this?
Social stamina is like a thing now that we're noticing that we
don't have. Yeah, it was I think it's a Gen Z term, social battery.
Yeah.
It's a genius idea, whoever came up with that.
Yeah, because now we have an excuse not to see people.
Yeah.
Well, my social battery is just running a bit low.
Yeah. Sorry, everyone.
My social battery has never been more charged because I am not. I am fun employed and I'm loving life. I'm doing great.
As the man with the excess time, what have you, game-wise, you've been sinking it into anything?
Yes, so much. Let me see. The other night, I finished Teardown. I didn't realize how close I was to the end of that game, but it was probably my favorite game 2023 that I played and finished that up. Bit of a disappointing final level, but amazing game. What else? I'm currently playing Pacific Drive.
I've been really keen to it because I downloaded that.
I picked that up too. I did the first garage sequence.
Yeah, I'm not actually totally certain that I'm super into it. I'm like getting more into it. I describe it as like a Subnautica like.
Is it a supernatural?
No, I think vibe?
Yeah, a bit.
Some of the stuff, like, they're just too specific on what you have to, like, getting into the car, turning the ignition, putting it in the drive. It's just all a bit too much. It's just like, what happened to the days of I get in the car and I can drive it?
Yeah, true. But that's kind of, I'm giving them a lot of leeway and patience because I want to figure out what they're going for. It's like when you're reading a book and you're not super sure if you're into it, and it's like you're waiting for the whole style to come together. But it's you. So I'm gonna finish the game, but I'm not sure if it's like up there on my list. But no, for sure they're like doing all the very specific operations of like turning the ignition and holding the key in the ignition when you turn it, then putting it in drive and then going. That all builds this game feel of like that the. So your car is like your safest place when you're out exploring the world. And it's supposed to build up this feeling, I think, that the safest place to you can sometimes be like pretty fucking unreliable. Like things, like when there's like radiation spikes when you're driving around. And if you have your car fully intact, you're mostly protected from the radiation. Like the first wave of radiation, you'll be totally protected. But if you don't look after it, or if you, like there was one zone that just had a zone condition where it was called perpetual darkness. So it was dark, like visibility was low, but it was super low. There was like this dark fog over everything. And one of the first things that happened to me when I got into the zone was something grabbed me and flung my car into a tree, busted both the front headlights. I didn't have any parts to fix or make new headlights. And so I was just driving blind off the silhouettes of trees the whole time. And it was like, this is chaos. So it definitely pushes that boundary of like, this like safe space being potentially dangerous. So it's cool. It's definitely a cool game and it's gorgeous. Like the art style is incredible. I think it does a lot of stuff that I just think other games have done better. But I really, it's the first game from the studio. So I admire the crap out of it.
Yeah. They're up for that award this year.
Yeah. Best debut.
So Pacific Drive. And then there's another one that's out there. Route something. I can't remember, but it's like you're just hitchhiking down. I'm assuming it's Route 66 maybe in the States, and it's just kind of a storytelling one, which I'm keen on, like in terms of the vibes. This seems pretty good.
Yeah.
Get some driving games in.
I do know the one you're talking about. Yeah. I also can't remember what route it is, but that sounds like it has an amazing storyline, and it's like multiple branching story paths. Like
I think so, yeah.
Loads
of
different ways to explore that game. That's actually for sure on the list. So there's Pacific Drive, there's Control. I'd be Control. I know we're planning on doing a games club sometime soon, but Control and the 2 DLC for that, I beat.
How's your Control progress going, Chris? Yeah.
I wish I could say the same as Luke, because I have just this huge backlog. Steam sales just wrapping up today, so I picked up even more games, and like every day I find myself, you know, after I finish work, finish the gym, and eat, and settle down with a nice cuppa, I'm going to dig into my backlog, play like Enshrouded, or finish up Control, and the next thing you know, I'm snapping out of a trance after realizing it's almost midnight and I've been playing Balatro all fucking night.
Oh,
like, yeah, it's a fucking problem, man. Like, I can't do anything else.
I
one game of Balatro.
I looked at, I had it saved on my wish list because, I mean, I got a little bit of a taste during Dave the Diver, and then I looked at some trailers and I was like, oh, maybe I should give this a good whirl, you know, before the Game Awards, whatever. And I've held off because I was like, no, I've got other things to do and this will just destroy my time.
It's
so addictive, man.
It's very much a one more run.
One more day, one more turn. So you haven't finished Control. That makes me feel better because I haven't finished Control.
We'll get there. The three of us will get there.
Yeah.
So you've been Balatro pilled the past month.
And I even started up Pacific Drive because I was looking for... Because I got that PS5 anniversary DualShock now, right? And I never experienced the adaptive triggers. And that's one of the games that... it works in.
Oh,
it
yeah.
even works wirelessly, which is even more rare. So I decided to try that out just so I can play around with the adaptive triggers. And yeah, I liked it. And it's just like every time I sit down, like I said, it's just Balatro's right there. And I don't even have to, like, I could just sit back and just like, I don't know. I literally zone out and then just play like one hand, like the World of Warcraft guy in South Park. You're like,
yeah. Hook it to my veins. Or Randy, where he's doing like the chase and the dragon, and it's just like,
yeah, that's a good one too. Yeah.
Just chase. Was meant to get onto Control and didn't. Not in the way that I wanted to. Like, I'm like 4 or 5 hours in, but unfortunately for me, I had to platinum Dave the Diver. And I say unfortunately, it was actually a joy. That was fun. So I platinum Dave the Diver, and then for one of the poetry episodes, I did my review on the PlayStation 5 Pro. PS5 Pro. I did my review for that, and I needed to like.
How are all those remasters looking now?
Oh, those remasters are looking pretty well remastered. No, it's the two games I were playing a lot of to try and get a feel for. It was Hogwarts Legacy and Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I was like, I need to get like a good handle on these guys if I'm going to talk about the thing. So that's where I got stuck, and then Hogwarts Legacy kind of grabbed me back in. I was only like loading up to be like, oh, load up and like have a little run around and then, you know, check things out, and then I end up starting a new game, and I cannot stop walking around Hogwarts. It looks amazing, and it's just so, all the secrets, I'm so there.
I think I heard Hogwarts Legacy is like canon or something now.
There's a TV show coming.
HBO, and they are saying the sequel to Hogwarts Legacy will be canon alongside the new TV show.
Okay.
Yeah. Interesting, because I know you said there was a Steam sale, and we do need to get onto our news episode shortly, but there was a headline I saw today saying that unplayed Steam games on people's libraries amounts to close to something like $9 billion, or was it $19 billion?
Shocker. Shocker.
Oh yeah, the money figure.
Is it money? Yeah, as in like the amount of money people have spent on their games and not playing. I was like, holy shit.
Since 2011, probably 2012 is when I started my Steam library. Maybe 2010.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just been, that's why I love the Steam Deck, because I just can go
finally
through.
Get into them.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, the Steam sale, like, goes crazy. Some of those games go for like 90% off, but they're still like, they have the full price tag. So I don't know what those figures are like relating to.
Yeah.
Is it what you paid at the time, or is it what, like, the actual full price of the game?
Probably full price.
Full price, I'd say. Yeah. For the sales thing.
Can I just really quickly,
before
we do get into that, I'd love to plug something. So one thing I did play recently that impressed the crap out of me, it's only a playtest thing, but it's called Blood Thief. I found it just looking through game dev stuff on YouTube, and there's this dude is making a game called Blood Thief in Godot, I think, and it's just really, it's a first person slash 'em up, but it's like very Quake inspired in terms of the movements, and it feels crisp, it feels really cool. So go wishlist it on Steam, or go try to play test. I was going to send it to you actually, Chris, because it's fun as hell.
I have a few of those already unplayed in my library. Yeah, I gotta
add it to the pile.
But he's got
Ultra Kill and
I really want to play Ultra Kill. Yeah. But he's got like 5 levels done, and I just want more levels. Like it's so good. The core mechanics and the movement stuff is like really satisfying. I just want more.
Right on. Okay.
One more.
Blood Thief, check it out, guys. Yeah. So, just in a note before we get on to the news, we checked out our Spotify Wrapped. And apparently 62% of our users this year, or 62% of our users overall, are from this year. So, you know, hey, if you're out there, send us an email. Let us know if you're enjoying it. We always appreciate that kind of stuff. And if this is your first time listening to this podcast, you know what's going on. Myself, Luke, and Chris, every month, check out the previous month's news round. You know what happened in video game world. And today, I got some interesting topics for you guys. Shall we kick it off with the first one?
Let's shall.
Chris, I think the first one is in your honor.
Oh, God, is it the FromSoft deal?
PlayStation to acquire From Software. Fuck. This is coming from The Verge by Ash Parrish. So reports that Sony was in talks to acquire Kadokawa, the Japanese media conglomerate that owns Elden Ring developer From Software, has been confirmed. Kadokawa has released a short statement acknowledging Sony's intention, but stating that no decision had been made. Here's the full letter. There are some articles on the acquisition of Kadokawa Corporation, hereinafter known as the company, by Sony Group Incorporated. However, this information is unannounced by the company. The company has received an initial letter of intent to acquire the company shares, but no decision has been made at this time. If there are any facts that should be announced in the future, we will make an announcement in a timely and appropriate manner. In addition to owning a majority stake in From Software, Kadokawa also owns Danganronpa developer, Spike Kunsoft, and Octopath Traveler Studio Acquire. Beyond video game, Kadokawa's holdings also include a number of anime, manga, TV, and film production companies. Sony already owns a 2% stake in Kadokawa, as well as a 14% stake in From Software. Sony's recent acquisitions have been a sore point for the console maker after acquiring Destiny 2 developer Bungie in 2022. The company underwent 2 rounds of layoffs, cutting roughly 300 employees, shuffled another 155 employees to another division within PlayStation, and cancelled a number of in-development projects. Then, in 2023, Sony acquired Firewalk Studios to create an original AAA multiplayer game for the PS5. That game turned out to be Concord, whose exceedingly poor reception led to the game being permanently shut down weeks after its launch, with Firewalk completely shuttered barely a year after Sony's acquisition. Ouch. Does that make you nervous, Chris?
Yeah, big time. Big time. Especially since, like, given the history, Sony already owns the IPs for Demon's Souls and Bloodborne, which is why we've never seen it outside of PlayStation. And they also just sit on Bloodborne for an unknown reason.
Like, I haven't done anything with Bloodborne since it came out, which sucks. It's such a great and popular game as well.
Did you see on a note of that, because I know we're all like waiting for like the remake or the remaster, is what everyone's hoping for Bloodborne. Did you see the PlayStation 30th anniversary? Oh, also, by the way, happy 30th anniversary of PlayStation. That happened today, day of recording.
Yeah, there was a little clip of Bloodborne in it, but it was just kind of showcasing the history.
But I'm interesting. What I find interesting was with each clip of a video game, I had a different kind of like quote, you know, for like, you know, for the players, for family, for this, for whatever. And for Bloodborne, it said for persistence.
Yeah, that's like, the only way you can get through those games.
Yeah, or is it the persistence of the fans wanting a remake?
No, I think that's just, I think it's hopium.
I love hopium, man. It's what I live off.
You don't even like Bloodborne. What are you
going to fuck? I'm happy for you, you know?
I will never play it. I refuse to be paywalled behind a console.
And it's crazy. Like Bloodborne, I've played a tiny bit of it when I owned a console that could play it. But it's such a good game. Like, I'd love to be able to play it. I'd love to get it on the Steam Deck.
Increase it to 60 frames per second.
Yeah. And release
resell
on,
that at full price and
release on PC.
Millions.
You don't even have to do Xbox, just PC.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, fuck. I don't even think that's ever going to happen. I think, Dark Souls and Elden Ring is going to go fucking, what's the word I'm looking for? Exclusive.
That'd be crazy. Yeah,
it would be such a dick move. But I mean,
they probably won't. I don't think they could survive.
Maybe
they'll
pull an Xbox and say, "Hey, we'll hold on to these for 10 years." And then afterwards, we'll make them
exclusive. But the other issue is the fact that it's going to be, if all this happens, which is still a big if, they will force PC users, if they do not make them exclusive, to sign up for the PlayStation accounts. Like, yeah, they have been for every other game.
Which is
like,
also region locked a couple of places out of the game, right?
So, 2/3 of the world.
Yeah, there's like, there's insane amounts. Like, they just can't play like Helldivers or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And like after people have already bought the game, they try to do that with Helldivers. But they're also doing it for like God of War and shit, like single player games. Yeah. Just like, why do I need PlayStation account?
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, man, the online thing, I tell you. Well, you know, if you're interested in checking out our post show, I've got a little thing talking about online content and the dangers therein with servers, etc. So if you're interested.
Chris is dying.
Yeah, Chris.
No, it's not just online content. It's digital content, too. Like, if you're in a country where you physically can't even log into PlayStation Network, then your digital content's fucked, too.
But it's so weird. It's such a weird financial decision to lock out. Well, I suppose you can still buy the game. You just can't play. Well, yeah, but if people know that you can't play the game, they're not going to buy the game. So it's such a weird financial move from Sony to make that a done deal in so many places.
I suppose Microsoft have been drawing their lines in the sand around what they think the future of the games industry will look like. Like, for years we talked about Phil Spencer's idea that he wants Xbox players to play Xbox on whatever they have, like on their phone, on their PlayStation. Like, he kind of doesn't care where you play them. So they're putting these like lines, digital lines in the sand around this. So the idea, like, speculatively, optimistically, the idea me and you floated, Chris, was that Xbox will become the framework through which you could play. It'll be like the Steam, but for everything. Like,
yeah,
you know, it'll become an overall framework. I think maybe Sony wants a piece of that pie, and they're trying to make themselves a force, which a lot of companies do by doing exactly what Sony are doing, like Epic Games did that.
You have to be within our infrastructure.
Yeah, you have to be in our infrastructure to do it. But that just has very messy knock-on effects for people who already own licenses.
It's frustrating. Like, I'm so glad I have Steam and they look out for their consumers when shit like this happens. But I wish they'd put their foot down and just be like, no, people need a Steam account. Fuck all your other EA Origins or your PSN accounts. Just like, in order to access the game, all they need is a Steam account. Otherwise, build your own framework one will use.
What was mad was there was, and it really frustrated me, and I you know, I get it now, I suppose, because I've always been within the PlayStation infrastructure and I've never had to sign on to anything else. With some things, like with 2K, there was an option to be like, oh, you know, link your two accounts and, you know, for whatever information bonus, yeah, whatever.
Anything that's cross-platform, I think it would require signing in with their client, right?
And I don't mind that, but there was a relatively new game that was on the PlayStation Plus, you know, free games, not free games thing, but in their catalog of games that you could download. And one of them was, I think it's Settlers of something. It's a Ubisoft game. And I was like, this seems like it'd be right up my street. And so I went to download it and it was on the menu and hit new game. And it was like, please create a Ubisoft account or whatever
else. Play.
I deleted the game immediately. I didn't go near it.
Oh, yeah. I've uninstalled and refunded games once I like find that out. I almost did, like, I still have to play it, but Red Dead Redemption 2 forces you to create an account and play. You have to be online in order to play Red Dead Redemption 2 campaign.
Is that a Rockstar account?
Yeah.
You
have to, even to play the single player game, you have to be online. It annoys me so much. But back to From Software.
Yeah, it's a bummer. I don't know.
It might not be a bummer. Like, they could handle it well. That's always a possibility.
Hey, history shows.
Sony don't have a great track record for doing that.
Does anybody, though, does all these big acquisitions, they always seem to end in, well, not always, but for the majority, they seem to end in tears in terms of definitely people losing their jobs, definitely games not going the way they should have. We're should have this, we're closed that, we'll move those people. I mean, that was, we...
AAA is dying, man. Like, it's just dying.
And that's why I think, dare I bring this up? That's why I think you're seeing, like, I think the games industry at large is moving in a different direction to what a game will look like, which I think is why you see institutions
called
like
Game of the Year, not
true.
On the best graphics for mediocre gameplay.
Yeah, so that's why you see the Game Awards, like there is an indie game in the mix, and there's a DLC in the mix for Game of the Year, because the current, I think that's telling of a trend, that the current model for, it's basically that uses the cinema model. It basically does these really hyper, high budget, high, you know, workforce projects, and they just don't sustain. They fall apart. They force crunch time on their workers. Like, they're so much bigger, ambitious projects than their equivalent in the film industry, that they just, it's not sustainable. It really doesn't seem to be sustainable, like, without like violating a bunch of workers' rights and stuff like that. Like, you seem to need to go smaller in order for this to work. I think we're seeing that trend being noticed more and more.
And I'd say, you know, I say good. I say lessons learned. I mean, like I said, I just Platinum Dave the Diver, and I was like, that's a video game.
Great,
you know?
Game.
That's a video
great
game.
Great game.
I hope Miyazaki game. Walks if oh. they get purchased. He just starts his own so? Company, some Kojima shit, and just starts his own thing.
Maybe. Although Kojima's stuff didn't go. It hasn't really gone the direction I wanted it to. But
that's because he's in that job. Miyazaki, he knows what's
he's
up.
He's got some sense, yeah. The Kojima stuff is wild, you know. Death Stranding 2, his own Strand-type game, all that kind of stuff. Like he's Kojima's the fine art of the video game world.
I love
know?
Him as an artist. I think he's dope. But when I played Control, I think I texted you this, Chris. When I played Control, I was like, damn, this is the game Kojima wishes he made. This is so Kojima coded and just, but also like a really good, fun game.
Yeah. It's what he needed to be. Like I said, because I tried to play Death Stranding at one point and I was like, this is like, everyone was joking, like, oh, the walking simulator, oh, the FedEx game or whatever else. And I was playing it for a little while and I was like, no, they're not wrong. This is kind of what I'm in. And it's like, I understand it's all wacky and wild, whatever else, but it's got, at the bare bones, the game's got to be fun to play. Otherwise, what's the point? Like, you know.
True.
Gentlemen, is the next console we're going to be over handhelds?
Oh, do you reckon?
Oh, I wanted to read these stories out to you and we can discuss.
Go on, what do you got?
So the Xbox handheld is on the horizon. This is coming from IGN, Wesley Yin Poole. So Microsoft gaming boss Phil Spencer has confirmed the company's plan to release an Xbox handheld, but stressed it's years away from release. In an interview with Bloomberg, Spencer said the expectation is that we would do something in the handheld game devices category, but such a device is a few years out. Microsoft, Spencer said, is currently working on prototypes and considering what it might do with its team developing its vision for a handheld based on what it learns from looking at the market. In the shorter term, Microsoft will focus on improving the Xbox app so it works better on existing handheld gaming devices. Spencer added, quote, longer term, I love us building devices, and I think our team could do some real innovative work, but we want to be informed by learning and what's happening now. Spencer has made no secret his desire to enter the handheld console market with Xbox hardware and practically confirmed the plan to IGN back in June following the 2024 Xbox Games Showcase. Quote, the future for us in hardware is pretty awesome, Spencer said at the time. The work that the team is doing around different form factors, different ways to play, I'm incredibly excited about. Today was about the games. We will have a time to come out and talk more about this platform, and we can't wait to bring it to you. When asked if a hypothetical Xbox handheld would be a dedicated gaming platform where you can play games locally, like a Steam Deck or Nintendo Switch, or a cloud-based handheld, Spencer responded, I think being able to play games locally is really important. In an interview with Polygon in March, Spencer listed various features that would make a handheld console feel like an Xbox, including having access to all your games with associated save files. He says, what should we build that will find new players, that will allow people to play at times when they couldn't go play in the past? Rumors were fueled by the trove of leaked Microsoft documents last fall, which revealed plans for an Xbox handheld. Spencer Ever would later come out to say those plans were outdated. Xbox had hinted at new hardware in the near-ish future, with Microsoft announcing a multi-year roadmap in February that includes next-generation Xbox console. So the reason I talk about console wars, gentlemen, is I also have another article here about the future of PlayStation handhelds.
Ooh.
So hold your Xbox thoughts while I go into this, and we'll bring the trifecta of handhelds together. So this is coming from Push Square by Stephen Taylorby. There's been a fair bit of noise lately about a potential new portable games console from PlayStation, and now Digital Foundry has weighed in on the subject. Speaking in a recent video, Digital Foundry's John Linneman comments on the recent reports that Sony is working on a new handheld. Quote, we actually heard about this handheld some months ago from a couple of sources specifically, he says. The report from Bloomberg confirmed what we had seen and heard off the record about this existing. Interestingly, Linneman adds that the device sounds further out than he initially thought, but he concludes that a future in which users are offered a home console and a handheld is very likely at this point. After discussing the possibility of a Steam Deck-like PlayStation device on Push Square, the vast majority of readers are very much in favor of it. Furthermore, 26% of our readers said they'd be willing to pay up to $400 for such a console, with smaller percentages happy to pay more. Well, with so many sources corroborating the story, it does seem very likely that Sony is actively working on this. Hopefully it all bears fruit at some stage down the line.
God damn.
So is next generation all about handhelds?
That's a great question. I don't know, though. I don't know. I love my Steam Deck. My Steam Deck is like my favorite thing. I just love.
It's cool, yeah. Form factor's great. Like, I don't know.
Screen's great.
I got it for traveling, so I can hook it up to like TVs and stuff. Like, I still don't really play it handheld too much.
Yeah. Are you still sniffing the fumes?
Maybe.
I no,
I forgot about that.
Maybe there's no, that smell went away after a while.
Ah, damn.
It was like a new plastic kind of smell, new fresh product. It's disappointing. So no, I don't anymore. Because the smell is still there. I absolutely would. No doctor will tell me that's a bad idea.
But I think in terms of the PlayStation portal. Yeah, the PlayStation Portal. What I have, and I love. I absolutely love that. It's changed how I game. Sony was incredibly surprised and delighted with how successful that's been. So they were probably like, hey, we need to do handheld. The Switch, I mean, that's been super duper successful.
Yeah.
Steam Deck is hugely popular and a successful way to play games. That's cloud gaming or local?
No, local.
Local.
It's all fucking amazing. All process on the thing.
And so Xbox and PlayStation are kind of missing out on
that.
You
can do local with it too. Or sorry.
You can do cloud Steam Guard or
whatever. Steam Link.
What's the space? How much space have you got on a Steam Deck?
It doesn't really matter. You just pop it open, put in whatever you want.
There's an SD card slot. But I think natively mine came...
SD's... just put in a new SSD.
Okay, yeah. I'm sure.
That's what my buddy did. Ripped it open, put in like 2 terabytes.
I think mine... Did mine natively come with a terabyte? Might be 500 gigs. It might only be 500 gigs, but loads of room. I've about in the teens of games on at any one time. It's great.
Because the way I look at it, like the Nintendo Switch 2 announcement is still pending.
Yep.
And we are approaching probably, you know, in the next 2 to 3 years, we'll probably hear some noise with the next generation of Xbox consoles and PlayStation consoles, which both, you know, Sony and Xbox have confirmed in their own way. There's already patents out there for what a PlayStation 6 might be like. So we know they're on the horizon. And it seems like, you know, based off these two reports, that handhelds are kind of on the roadmap potentially for Sony and Xbox. So do we have a Switch 2 versus PS?
I want to say no, but I kind of hope so, just to watch fucking Microsoft and Sony both get humbled by Nintendo, because there's no way they're going to be able to compete. Like, it's still fucking Nintendo.
They've always struggled to get, like, the PSP like ultimately wasn't successful for Sony.
No,
like, they discontinued it for a reason, and they tried to pivot to the PS Vita. That was also unsuccessful, and like a really cool...
Most of us don't want to play those high fidelity games in our handheld.
Hands. Yeah.
We want our Pokemons and our side scrolling Marios and shit like that.
Yeah. You need to make the right games for it for sure.
But it's crazy that, like, it is kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy to me that the Steam Deck is as powerful as it is. Like, that blows me away all the time. Like, control was absolutely beautiful on it.
Yeah, but it also depends. Like, you try to plug in Cyberpunk, you're getting maybe 40 minutes out of that sucker.
True.
Whereas you play like Dead Cells, I can go on an entire flight playing Dead Cells.
Yeah,
so it really
for sure.
Depends on what you're playing.
Battery-wise, yeah. But I just mean processing power-wise. Like, it blows me away that what it can actually achieve. And add a couple of years onto that, I think consoles or the chips are getting... like Moore's Law, they're getting that bit more advanced. Mm-hmm. But
that's got to slow down soon, though.
Yeah.
Maybe the future is just trimming down that... high-end tech and getting it as small as possible. That could be the future, actually.
I mean, the one thing I will say about the portal is that, like, it's not even an OLED screen. It's an LED, but, like, high-end LED. Like, it looks amazing. Like I said, Hogwarts, you know, Legacy, I played a good chunk of Final Fantasy Rebirth on that thing. The screen's, like, it's not, like, handheld, like, the PlayStation Portable. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not small. Like, I mean, I wouldn't say that thing is, like, legitimately, I could fit it in my back pocket. It's a bigger thing, but I still love what it does.
Yeah, fair.
So.
But even that has its trade-offs, because suddenly you're fucking playing like this, like, hands like 2 feet apart, and I like that's not comfortable.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's a strange one.
It's not for certain games, like I said, like the Tekken's and stuff. I can't play that on the.
I find that the same issue with the Steam Deck. Like, if I'm like lying in bed and like I'm propping it up, I get mad pain in my elbows and shit.
Yeah, I had that literally last night. I went to bed and was playing Pacific Drive in bed, and like blood circulation to my hands wasn't as good. I was like, I have to shake my hands out. Yeah. It feels weird. I don't think portable is the future of gaming, but it can for sure have a place in the future.
I still think there's a huge room for VR. Like it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be a gimmick. It just needs to be more accessible.
Yep. I agree.
You really?
I think VR is going to be huge.
Yeah.
I think VR is going to be really big. We're still like figuring out the kinks though. Like
there's big still, ass headset, no room to move in, like how the controls are supposed to work.
I just saw clips from this recent tournament that was done, like kind of a streamer thing, and they were playing some VR game, and I was watching them play it being like, that looks so fun and cool. It's like they were just shooting bow and arrows across this like giant arena in a massive 3D space at each other, and they're using the Quest 3 and just jumping around doing it, and it looked so sick. I'm like, VR is so cool.
It's got to take. Like, that is... Ever since we were young, we dreamt of being immersed, like, yes. Truly immersed.
And I know we have the question, like, wireless has to be a really important thing, and I know we get wireless with the likes of the Quest and things like that. But, mm-hmm. like, when I think on it as a whole, like, PlayStation has tried to enter that realm, and they really... I mean, the PlayStation 5 came with the PSVR 2, and they were really like, hey, we're going to go do this, we're going to get the AAA games, and it's just not had any sort of traction at all. It's expensive. But I think it's expensive across the board.
Yeah.
It's not just expensive as in the hardware. Like, you need space to play it. Like, when I was living in my last apartment, like, my desk was crammed in a corner. And, like, I thought about getting the Index one time. And I just, like, I reached my hand out and, like,
punched the wall.
And, like, my elbow hits the wall. I'm just like, I'm going to fucking break something if I try to, you know, get sweaty about a VR game.
Yeah, my apartment now is good for it because I do have lots of space. Very thankful for that. Yeah. But when I was at home with the parents, like, it was really hard to find spots in the house where I could actually play it. I remember playing Gorilla Tag for the first time.
Gorilla Tag looks amazing.
Oh, it's so fun, dude. It is unbelievable.
That
fun.
Was my nomination last year for Steam Awards for VR Game of the Year. Gorilla Tag looks
It's so fun. If you don't mind, like, literally little children shouting at you the whole time, it's the funnest thing. But I smashed my hands into the table in the kitchen so many times, so painfully. I've never had the same VR injury repeated as many times as I did with Gorilla Tag. You just get so into it.
You're it's funny because I think I've said it on the podcast before, but, like, VR for me, my kind of one true experience with VR was Rogue Squadron. And on top of having the VR headset, Andrew was the one who introduced me to it, but he had a whole throttle kind of thing, like and a what would you say, like the joystick thing the joystick thing for, like, you know, directing your ship basically. But it was so immersive. Now, I was doing barrel rolls and somersaults. So when I got off that thing, I was like, I am going
nauseous,
to promise. But it was the experience was so amazing to think that I'd look out of my cockpit and I'd look down at a dogfight kind of happening underneath me and everything. I was like, this is what... And I mean, like, it's there. But I mean, it's been there for about 5 or 6 years now, and mm-hmm. it still always just kind of flops. Like, I think PlayStation VR 2 hasn't been mentioned on a PlayStation showcase in a while. They're just like, nah, I don't think we're going to do this anymore.
But you have to, it's still at a stage now where, like, I think it only really had a spike in recent years because Meta bought Oculus's whole shtick, and they made it their loss leader. So I bought my Meta Quest 2 for £300.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, if you look at the hardware specs, it's up there with, like, the Valve Index and stuff like that.
Well, that's because they're building a replacement for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's it. That was like,
fuck Meta, man. That shit scares me.
That was the Faustian bargain. But it was their loss leader. Like, they were selling these, like, really good headsets that were completely wireless for £300. And you're looking at it being like...
On the flip side, the Steam Index is about $1,200.
Yeah, and so they need to bring the cost of it down. But yeah, you have... Your average headset, I think, your average VR setup is like $1,200. Probably still. It might be cheaper now. They might have brought down the cost a bit.
Like, I think the PSVR 2 one, although it's wired and stuff like that, so it doesn't have some of the benefits of the higher specs ones, but even the PlayStation VR 2 was like $500.
Yeah, which is also a great price point for VR. They just, like, it needs to, all the stuff that we're talking about with this, or that I was talking about with the Steam Deck, how good the processor's on, that has to, the VR headsets have to catch up with that, and it's just like... You know, you're
making it affordable. So here's because we're talking about, like, you know, handhelds or whatever else. Here's my theory that handheld is proving to be so popular at the minute for a lot of people. The PlayStation Portal being that, the fact that people are playing, like, with Xbox infrastructure, people are playing on, like, mobile phones and everything like that. The next generation of consoles will probably all, and I'm, you know, marking it down here is my prediction, that the Switch 2 will have a docking station. So, you know, again, you'll be able to play on your TV and take it out. But I think the next console from PlayStation and the next console from Xbox will be sold with an adjacent, here's the handheld thing that you can play with it as well.
Packaged with it?
I mean, probably... No. Not packaged. They'll offer that as a here's for extra whatever, you can get that. But I think what they'll sell that and just, here's also how you can... play all these games, you know, handheld. I think the two things will be released in tandem to be like, hey, you know how much you love the Switch? Here's the PlayStation's version. Hey, here's the Xbox version of it.
Do you think?
I think Microsoft would just build the software and the firmware and then just open it up for homebrew hardware and like third party.
That'd be sick.
Yeah. Just like fucking somebody will cobble together something with a Raspberry Pi and just like, yeah, now this plays my Xbox games.
Yeah. That's, you are seeing like the handheld emulators market is just nuts right now. There's so many cool handheld emulators.
I don't know how they get away with it, dude. You sell them with the games like on Amazon. I've got like, Nintendo not found you?
I have like that, I can't remember what mine's called. The one you recommended to me, Luke, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm fair to say I haven't opened it for a while, but I went through some of the Pokemon games. I was like, this thing's just amazing. It's just like playing a Game Boy.
Beat Crash Bandicoot on mine the other week. Nice. Speaking of games, I was going through.
It's crazy. So fun.
Okay, so to answer my question, yes or no, is the next generation war for Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo in the handheld genre?
Nope.
I'm going to say no. I do think handheld will be a part of it, but...
Not what it's based off.
I think it's still going to stick for the consoles the way we have them now. I'd like to be wrong, though.
I think I heard Xbox is actually skipping their mid-console, like, pro release.
It's why the PlayStation 5 Pro, I think, were able to sell at such a high cost, because there was no competition.
Oh, yeah. True.
They were like, hey, if you want the mid-range, higher specs version to play games, this is the only one that you can buy.
Now they want to fucking own Elden Ring and Dark Souls.
But Chris, you'll be able to play them in 60 frames per second.
I won't play them. I won't play them.
You're becoming so anti-Sony.
But he's a console hating PC playing. It's, you know, but it's in line.
I still have a Switch.
The amount of positive things you've said about like Microsoft and their like future, their potential future, where they could possibly go.
I do think Sony is a bit more on the evil side, though.
Than the others, than like Nintendo and that. Well, what do you think, Darren? How do you think the future is for? Do you think it's portable?
I don't think, like, in terms of console thing, I mean, Xbox have confirmed a console, PlayStation have confirmed that there'll be the PlayStation 6. I think that in order to sell them to a larger market or to be able to gain a bigger control of a market, that you will sell that and then also sell a handheld version of the same thing. Like, potentially, let's say, you know, there'll be some games that they won't be available to play on the handheld. It won't have the processing power, but we'll get a PSP for the PlayStation 6 that will locally. I think that's important. Important as well. I think they all need to be able to be locally available. That you can't. It's not an online connection. It's not a cloud-based thing, because that comes with like, okay, in Ireland we've got a great infrastructure for that, but in most other countries there's not a great infrastructure for cloud gaming.
You're gonna have to go with digital copies then.
Absolutely. Yeah. Unfortunately. No. Well, I mean, they did say. Download them or whatever else. But we'll see. But that's my. I mean, I'd like to see that. I'd love to be in a world where like I'm going into a Smith's and I see PlayStation 6 portable, Xbox Series Y2K portable, and the Switch 2, being like, man, what handheld thing do I want to play? Because if that existed, I would probably consider buying an Xbox handheld thing to get into the Xbox infrastructure and to continue on my PlayStation consoles. That's probably how I'd look at it. Like, you know,
funny you mentioned just right at the end there, the ridiculous Xbox names. My dad bought an Xbox the other day. He bought an Xbox for himself for Christmas. Series X, they have a 2 terabyte model now. Mm-hmm. And I was up at the house the other day and he was like, oh, I got the Xbox 360 Ultra. I was like, Dad, are you having a stroke? What are you talking about? He was like, you know, the Xbox 360. And I was like,
Luke,
the 15-year-old console?
Luke, that's not his fault.
That's not his fault.
That's not his fault. That's Xbox's fault.
Next Xbox is going to be called the One X.
Xbox One X. That's so stupid.
The X1, no, they've... Yeah, no, maybe. Maybe
yeah, X1, time. Yeah, that would be another the Xbox fucking X1. On-brand ridiculous name.
But Chris, I'm going to
use... Or just Xbox.
Yeah, just Xbox. The Xbox. I'm going to segue with a thing that you talked upon earlier about, you know, the Quest and the fact that the meta, they're just kind of stealing our identity and all that shit's kind of scary. Well, Pokemon Go is mapping the world and we're the ones doing it. That's my next story. This is an interesting article. It leans a little bit on the darker side of things, but I thought it was for an interesting read, right? This is coming from GameSpot by Blair Marnell. So Pokemon Go players recently learned that the game's developer Niantic is using their data to create a 3D model of the world before expanding it into a large geospatial model with AI. Niantic is hoping to monetize the data, but even at this early stage, the company realizes that could be put to use in unintended ways, including during wartime. As reported by 404 Media, Niantic's senior vice president of engineering, Brian McClendon, was asked about a military application of the company's large geospatial model during the Bellingcat's Bellingfest event. Quote, "I could definitely see it," said McClendon. "I think the question is, would there be anything they would do with it that would be outside of what a consumer or Bellingcat would want them to do with it? If the use case is identical, then that seems completely fine. If the use case is specific in military and adding amplitude to war, then that's obviously an issue. Take, for example, the ongoing war in Ukraine. If Russia had access to complete 3D models of Ukraine's cities and countryside, it would give the invading country a tactical advantage that it doesn't currently have. For now, Niantic hasn't ruled out selling its LGM data to governments in the future." Future. Quote, "The LGM is an early stage project and is months or even years away from any kind of product," noted an Niantic spokesperson when asked about the possibility of selling the data. "Just like any kind of AI, there will be important questions that arise and we'll tackle those responsibly and thoughtfully. For now, we don't have to worry about Pikachu and the other Pokemon being used to map out current combat zones in the near future. Niantic's early map of LGM model appears to be largely composed of locations in North America and Europe, while the rest of the world is a long way from being completed. One of the franchise's other mobile games, Pokemon Trading Card Game Pocket, recently attracted 30 million downloads in its first week alone. Additionally, Pokemon Gold and Silver now has a line of 25th anniversary merchandise, but fans will have to wait until 2025 for Pokemon Legends Z or A, one of the next game in this series." So I could probably left that last paragraph out. It's not important, but interesting that that's being brought up about us essentially doing.
I feel like we got the memory of goldfish. Like, this argument has happened so many times before with fucking Google Maps and Street View and the satellite imagery and even social media live feeds. It's just like, oh yeah, now they can sell this data, or like, this is good for other governments and war. And it's like, we've heard this so many times, man.
But we're living in the world of AI, in a case where they've gotten us,
what
the
is
people
AI?
To
it's not going to create new routes. Like, those don't exist, right? Like, what is AI going to do?
I'm assuming it's going to probably help build a, as they said, what they referred to it as, a geospatial or large geospatial model of the globe.
Yeah, it's just, I think I read, and Colin posted this up in the group the first time, and I read that it was basically what they mean when they say geospatial model is like managing flows of people through areas and seeing what routes people preferentially go. I doubt they're gathering anything that Google is not already gathering.
Yeah, but I'd be shocked if they were. There's no way. Sure.
Yeah, Google's definitely gathering all that. Yeah, it's still, I still don't like it. Like, it's still gross to me.
Why can't we just walk around and catch Pokemon with there being no fucking consequences, like, you know?
Because we live under capitalism, Darren.
Yeah, we love capitalism.
That can't happen. No, I just think, and I've always thought, and I've always been like, tried to champion like the consumer protections around this stuff, around your data, but that's like nearly impossible in this day and age, like in the years of, yeah, speaking of Meta capturing your soul and making a digital clone of you. Yeah, it's just I have this conversation in work sometimes as well. Like, there's one of my coworkers is a fair bit younger than me, and something came up around data and data collection and data gathering, and I think I said something about TikTok, and I was like, I didn't use TikTok for a while because like I'd heard stuff about their data policies, but like, it's probably the exact same as the other apps. And she was like, why do you care about like whether people collect your data or not? And I was like, I don't know where to start with that topic.
It's a loaded question.
It's a really loaded question. It was like, basically your data is like really valuable, and there's lots of like advertisers and stuff that would buy it and like use it for certain things. But also like, yeah, there's, I won't go on too dark a tangent with this, but I'll just draw a line under it and say, yeah, no bueno.
It's also like, well, yeah, a tinfoil hat, but it is used by governments and military to sow the seeds of doubt. Just they find, like, through algorithms, like people who might be more susceptible to this type of propaganda.
Oh yeah.
And then they just push it on their feeds, or push it on the feeds of someone close to them. And then
we're very much living in that world right now with all the kind of, you know, the geopolitical uncertainty that exists in the world today, with people being pushed to kind of,
and the advertising's fucked up too. Like, you start talking to a friend about a new brand of toothpaste you're using, and suddenly you're getting ads for it, which is just bonkers.
Yeah.
I mean, at times it's been mildly convenient, but most of the other times I'm like, I hate every aspect of this.
Yeah, and it's just because like you have signed off to give all your data, so you get on the Wi-Fi network as someone else frequently, and they spend a lot of time searching for that toothpaste. Then suddenly you're connected with them, and the advertisers assume that you want it too. Mm-hmm. It's very.
It's
sketchy, man.
Capitalist dystopia kind of situation.
Black Mirror, you know?
It's a little Black Mirror.
Touched upon a lot of those kind of aspects.
Yeah, it's like that's kind of just the water we're swimming in right now. But the only thing I can say about it is I don't like it, and I like more consumer protections and more stuff like GDPR is having to click all those cookie things is annoying as fuck. But I like the principle a lot. Yeah. Like I like the idea of like handing the consent.
And reject all. Thank you.
Yeah, reject all. I can't see your website.
You know, the funny thing is, too, you spend some time on Twitch, like, and if you're not subbed to someone, you have to go through ads.
Yep.
Unless you have an ad blocker, which don't even work in other countries, because of GDPR, somebody figured out that in order for a website to figure out you have an ad blocker, they have to already be collecting information on you.
Oh,
so if
right.
if you said no, they're like, you're not allowed to know that I have this ad blocker then. So what the fuck is going on? So they had to like, that shit works, man.
Yeah.
Like, the whole YouTube debacle, everyone was complaining that like, I can only watch like two videos before I have to disable my ad blocker.
Yeah.
Not here. No, none of us have had to do it.
Because they're not allowed to like overstep that. I love that. Like, again, like, pretty loaded topic, but I love that they were so forward in that. And the UK are actually being really good about their digital like legal policy and stuff. They're really trying to take a step forward, get ahead of where the social media companies want to go with this and like try and legislate for it, which I think is great. It's a really important area to be forward thinking in, because that stuff at Niantic is like they're just doing what everyone else is doing. They just maybe got caught doing it.
That's essentially it.
I also want to take a minute to just let anyone know who is listening, we're not experts on any of this.
Don't
take our words as gospel. We're just spewing what we think.
I make cartoons for a living.
Thank you for that disclaimer, Chris. I don't say this enough. We have no idea what we're talking
about. We're just
here for the lols.
Just guys.
But to bring it up for our last little topic, and I don't really have an article about this, it's just more of a thing that by the time this episode goes out, it releases on a Thursday, so Thursday night, midnight, will be the beginning of the Game Awards. The Golden Joystick announced, which was it's a fan-voted one, Chris, am I right saying that one?
Purely fan-voted.
The Black Myth Wukong won Game of the Year. Luke, myself and Chris kind of talked about this in a whole episode, but what's your thoughts on Game of the Year? What's your personal game of the year?
Out of what's listed?
Not out of what's listed, but like what? Here, I got three questions for you.
Okay.
What do you think out of what's nominated? What do you think will win? What do you hope would win? And then from your own personal library of games you've played this year, what was your game of the year?
What do I think would win? What do I hope would win? Out of the nominations,
and then outside of the nominations, what was your own personal game of the year?
I'm just looking at my phone because I definitely took a screenshot of my choices, but I can't even remember the nominations.
Nominations:
Wukong, Shadow of the Erdtree, Astrobot, Metaphor ReFantazio, Final Fantasy Rebirth,
and Balatro.
And Balatro.
Yeah, those are your six.
Sorry, I'm scrolling on my phone trying to find this. I was like, half
Monkey
listening.
Souls.
Monkey Souls. Yep.
New Persona.
Yep.
Final Fantasy Remake.
Part two.
Yeah.
The Sony robot.
Balatro. Yeah, the Sony mascot. And
DLC.
Fuck off. Shadow of the Erdtree. The clear winner.
Yeah.
I was pretty divided on this. I'm pretty sure I can find it now. I'm pretty sure I gave mine to Final Fantasy.
What you think will win? Is that your or that what you hope will win?
That's a great question.
And both can be the same thing.
I
That'd be very boring of you, though, Luke.
I think I most hope, even though I haven't played it at all and I don't know how it works, I kind of hope Balatro wins.
Yes.
Like I said, it's in a good shape. I can't get over the fact that I haven't played Balatro. The only Balatro I've played is the DLC, the tiny DLC that they gave to Dave the Diver. And I just kept going back to that Sea People Village to challenge the same people over and over again just to get my fix of Balatro. So it's effective.
I just think the vibes are great. Like, I think it's the same with, like, Vampire Survivor. Was that a couple of years ago?
Oh, my God, yeah.
And I was like,
that's still, they just released a huge DLC with like Ode to Castlevania.
Awesome. Yeah.
It was like 220 new weapons, like, or maybe 120. I don't know. Too many new weapons, like doubled the amount of characters. Mm. They went fucking nuts.
I think I said,
and I beat all of it.
I think I said Final Fantasy for my choice because that's probably the one game that I've been around the most out of any of the nominees. Balatro is kind of my hope because, again, like, the vibes are right. Like, with Vampire Survivors, it was that, and I was like, there's something about this game. Like,
Vampire Survivors wasn't up for Game of the Year.
No, it wasn't indie. But I mean, at the time, like, I'm saying, I guess I'm kind of comparing the heuristic in my mind as to why I think that. So, like, the kind of people that were into it, the kind of hype that was around it, the story of the game, all, like,
The decency of the guy who made it, you know. Yeah. I mean, there's lots of good vibes and good stories coming out about what he's, you know, the fact that he'll never make it.
It in his will that, like, the IP could never be sold or licensed to casinos or gambling institutions. Or
stuff companies. Like that. It takes a lot of boxes for me that, like, that Vampire Survivors did. And I was like, I think if I play this, I'd enjoy it. Did play it. Fucking loved it. And, yeah, so I kind of... The story is great. The positioning is great. I want to see a move more towards, like, indie. I love indie titles. Like, some of the most rewarding gaming experiences I've had in the past... Well, since I was a kid, I think I've been to indies. I can't remember the last.
I just got you one of my favorites, actually.
What?
You did.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to getting into that.
Which one was that?
CrossCode. I've been trying to get you to play it for years too. You just in one year out the other.
I got locked
when
in
it comes
for
to
the
computers. It's so true. I just don't understand.
It's the.
It's a game. It's CrossCode.
Is it available on PlayStation?
It's available on everything.
Oh, well, damn.
It's probably best played on Switch, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I'd say, well, it's going to be best played on Steam Deck now. Cause I can't wait. That's going to be sick. Yeah, I just love that for Game of the Year. Outside of those two, the first two questions, like what I would hope out of the nominees and what I think will out of the nominees. So what I think will, Final Fantasy. What I hope will, Balatro. Outside of that... God, I'm not good for
Outer Wilds
today. Always Outer Wilds. For Game of the Year,
just your own personal one, you know. What are you like? Wow.
Oh God, there definitely is one. I wish I had time to prep for this question because there's definitely like a huge laundry list that I'm going to be kicking myself for not thinking of now.
Well, while you're thinking that, I'll turn to Chris and say, Chris, has your mind changed at all for what you think is going to win Game of the Year?
Blatcher was pretty close, but like Shadow of the Erdtree fucking slaps, man. So if it's on the list, it's getting the vote.
God, that's going to be so frustrating for me. And
it's too controversial to win.
I think
it was put there so Blacksmith might actually be able to win because that was the other controversial pick.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That'd be an interesting political move.
Yeah.
By the gaming world. All right, Luke, you've had a total of whatever that was, 30 seconds. So
I don't know, I'm brain dead right now.
I think Animal Well looks sick. Again, it's rare that I'll play a game the year it comes out. I'm usually like a year or two behind.
No, sorry, it didn't have to come out this year. I just mean a game that you played this year that you're like, wow, I loved playing that this year. That was so much fun. I had the best time.
I see what you mean. Oh. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry, I should explain myself better. Yeah, it's not a 2024 game. It's just like whatever you sat with this year that you're like, hot damn, I fucking love the shit out of that.
Control. Definitely Control.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Control slapped.
Chris?
Yeah, control could be it for me too. I'm just
Control slapped.
Trying to think what else I played a fuck ton this year.
The vibes, there's how fun it was.
I played early in the year, I played a ton of the finals.
Oh yeah.
I love that game. Shout out of the Erdtree.
Yeah.
Nice. Good
for you. No, that's fair. That's fair. It'll be an interesting thing if it does go and win, you know, Shadow of the Erdtree, in terms of how that will change the whole aspect of, you know, DLCs. As you said, like the turning point for what gaming might actually be
what
going forward.
What a game release is considered. I think it's I'm totally fine with Shadow of the Erdtree being in for Game of the Year. I don't think it'll win this year because it would be too controversial, but I think they have a really strong case for a DLC.
They're setting precedent.
Yeah, exactly.
They're setting precedent. If some company makes some sort of like DLC on that scale, then like
why not?
Can't it be considered?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, nice. What about you, Darren? What's your game of your personal game of the year that you played?
It's Rebirth.
Oh yeah, that's a good point.
It would be Rebirth. But what's interesting in terms of like that game just was amazing, start to finish, and such a joy in terms of like fun gameplay. Like I don't mean like you sent that funny video of that guy talking about Balatro and being like it's not about just the graphics and the whatever else. But Final Fantasy had a bit of all of that. It looked amazing. Narratively, it's a bit wild, but I'm in for that.
Also like. Because there's three of them, right?
Yeah.
So this is just like...
This is Empire Strikes Back.
This is Matrix Reloaded, yeah. Empire Strikes Back is the outlier, though. That's the best Star Wars.
And this could be the best Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
I think they're going to struggle with the Part 3 to make it... Like, this game's huge. Like, it's an average of 120 hours to finish the game. This game's massive. And 3, I just don't think will be on that same scale. They've got a lot more, like, shit to cover. So I don't think it'll be as expansive and fun and side quests and.
Isn't that what makes the second iteration usually the worst though? Like, because it's the bridge.
Maybe.
Yeah possibly. We'll find out. We'll find out. But I mean, that one. But again, next to that, I would think Dave the Diver has to be up there. Like that game. Yeah. And I actually platinumed it, but then I was quite sad that I platinumed it because I was.
Yeah,
like,
I've been there. Armored Core 6, man. Like,
oh, did you plat that?
Oh wait. That would be my game of the year. Was that this year that I played that?
Probably.
Heartbroken, though. I still even haven't filled that gap, man.
Yeah, like, it leaves a hole sometimes, yeah. You know? And I was like, well, because it was almost a thing where, like, oh, I've got a new game. Like, oh, I can't new game this right now. Like, I have to step away from this for a long time. Like,
I got sad when I was saying at the start of the episode that I beat Teardown the other night. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I got really sad. I was like, but I haven't perfected every mission. I could go back and get, like, full points in every mission. Well, that's what I'm going to do. I can't wait.
Well, that's what... Armored Core 6 Platinum was like S tiering every single mission.
Cool.
Fuck, it was hard, dude.
Say so.
I did it.
Congratulations. I love trophy hunting, man. It's become my new thing, you know. I'll play this shit out of the game.
Chris saying, I did it with 1,000 yard stairs.
I'm pretty spacey.
Yeah, it's like that, the flashbacks. You just see like the war planes and stuff in the background. Like, you know, I remember that.
I kind of half expected I'm going to like snap to and be playing Balatro.
I'm not sure if I'm just dreaming about this podcast and actually playing Balatro right now.
Just message me straight after and be like, Darren, we did have a podcast episode, right? Listen, guys, that's been the news episode.
Woo-hoo.
Thank you so much. If you guys are keen to keep listening to the Gift of Gaming podcast, well, then you can do so. Check out our Patreon over patreon.com/thegiftofgaming, whereby you can find so many more episodes. Myself, Luke, and Chris are going to hop on to do a bit more news stuff on our post show, where I'll be asking the question, what do you guys think of the Stop Killing Games movement and about Ubisoft getting sued over the crew. It's all linked, it's all there, and if you're enthused by that, or if you're like intrigued by what I just said, hey, check out that Patreon. It's behind a paywall, but like, you know, I gotta buy my sandwich.
Not a console paywall though, it's just a coffee.
Yeah, just a coffee. Exactly. It's the price of a coffee. Thank you, Chris. I never tell people how much it is really, but it's cheaper than a coffee a month. You'll love it. It's great. Check it out. Luke, Chris, thank you so much for being here. And to our listeners, as always and forever, keep enjoying the gift that is gaming. Peace out.